You want me to hold it and talk into it?
Hello.
Today is the December 5th, and it is 1:36 p.m. I'm here with Pastor Mark Henrich, and we will be discussing some questions for my Church History paper on the Caribbean Christian Training Institution. And my first question to you, sir, is when was the first time you realized the need of having the Caribbean Christian Training Institution?
When I first got down to Antigua in 1987, they had an elders program, a deacon program already set up in place. Pastor Seeger meeting with three men. The good of it was that they're studying God's Word. They were doing Kaler's dogmatics. The negative of it was that they'd been doing this for a number of years, but there was no end in sight, and there wasn't any practical experience tied in with it. They didn't know where it was going to ever end. It just kind of went by the wayside after a little while. 1990, Pastor Kale came down. It was probably a few years after that, 93, 94, that as we looked at our ministries, we had been under the home mission mindset, which is that if you're going to have a called worker, it's usually going to come down from the States. We wanted to have Antiguan workers, but the only way we saw that was possible was the normal route that they'd have to go up to the States for schooling. And we started looking more and more at the fact that that wasn't going to be as feasible. Not everybody could leave. Not everybody had the finances to go. Not everybody could make the cultural adjustment to go. Would it be possible then to start our own training program in the islands like other world fields were doing? This was our goal. We got all ready to go in probably 95. Pastor Kale and I got permission from the mission board to divide up our calls. Instead of being associate pastor, that Pastor Kale would be the CCTI developer and I would be the parish pastor. And when we were going to get going with that in September, I believe, of 1995, Hurricane Louise came through and devastated the island. And for the next 2 years, Pastor Kale's portfolio was rebuilding. Mm-hmm. And he was in charge of all the rebuilding, and so the whole CCTI program was put on hold for 2 years, and we really didn't get going with it again until 97, I believe, 97 or 98.
Okay. So when you guys started looking, and then up until 97, was there a huge demand from the people in Antigua to be a part of, to be leaders in the congregation, or...?
I wouldn't say a huge demand, because it was, you know, our pattern had already been set that, okay, the called teachers that we have and the called, especially the called pastors, you know, there are people that came from the States. There was always a desire to have Antiguan leaders in public ministry, but how we get them was never something that we really worked through. And I guess we had as the leadership, the expat leadership had to really work through, can it happen in a different way? And once we talked about, I think once we showed people that it was possible to become leaders without having to go back to the States, that we could do our own training on the island, people got excited about it. But it wasn't something that they were, nobody knew how to do it. We hadn't exposed people to that before. One of the things that came about was we started having people stepping forward in leadership positions. Veronica Abraham, Florence, Titus, some of the people that were in the school, how could we get them certified to make sure they had enough religion courses? Errol Howe was serving as an evangelism leader. You know, could we get a certificate for him? What about youth work? So it wasn't just as a pastor, but youth work. What about a deaconess? And that's what really got us looking into doing our own education system.
Okay. So in terms of the qualifications, did you feel personally that you were able to do this, to provide leaders within the church there, or?
You mean, were the people qualified, or was I qualified to serve as a CCTI instructor, or?
Both.
definitely people were in the congregation, definitely were qualified. I had the gifts, people that had a heart for the Lord and an eagerness to serve. People were coming in from different backgrounds. You know, a lot of our teachers just had their high school education, but wonderful teachers. We were getting more and more people in our congregation, too, that had college education backgrounds, you know, like a William Aquary, Darren Ward, some of the names I'm kind of forgetting already. And that was one of the challenges, having people that maybe had just a high school education or people that had a college education, and how could we make a course study for them that would use their gifts. As far as whether or not I had the gifts, I thought so in some ways. It just seemed like a good fit when we first did it that Pastor Cale would take that area and I would take the parish planning. But then when Pastor Cale left, it also seemed like a natural fit that I would take the CCTI over and Pastor Sternhagen be the parish pastor. And I guess it was part of my reasoning in leaving Antigua that I didn't know if all of my gifts were in course development, and I thought maybe somebody else could come in that had a better handle on developing courses and use their gifts in that way.
Okay, so in terms of providing leaders within the church in St. John's and probably the Caribbean as a whole, where do you see the from the time you guys started, what was the vision for the CCTI, and where do you hope it'll go someday?
You know, our vision was always that we have our own trained local workers. Learning some things from the world field, especially the Latin American field, you know, one of the things that we saw that we really liked is that they had their own training program, which it was a long time training program, but one of the things that I really liked about it is that they got their pastors involved in practical ministry right from the start. They were doing calls, they were helping with services, they were preaching sermons well before they actually became pastors. So there was that practical application. One of the things that we didn't see in the other world fields as much was a certificate program for people who didn't want to be a pastor, for the teachers, for the lay leaders, for the youth worker like a Jackie Phoenix at the time, and deaconesses. And one of the challenges we had was our synod really didn't have, for the world fields, every field seemed to have their own curriculum and course of study. And what we had troubles with is developing exactly what should our course of study be and what should be the length of time before one gets certified. And so our Antiguan teachers would sometimes express, you know, how many courses do we actually have to take? And we weren't sure. I mean, I wasn't really sure. And so that was one of the reasons, too. I was thankful Pastor Cherney came down, who had familiarity with the educational system in the States for our Wells, and that he could help to determine, okay, this is a good course of study. And because he was a professor at MLC, that course of study that was determined would have, you might say, a better legitimacy. And that was our goal when I left. Now it's been 3 years since I've been there. How that's actually being carried out right now, I'm not as aware of.
Okay. Anything that you would like to add for the next? Anything that you would like to add?
I'd like to thank my mom and my dad.
God.
God, my wife. No, the CCTI was a great thing. Loved teaching the courses. It's what we need to have in all of our fields. I hope. And I think I'm seeing that from different fields now, that the fact that Professor Cherney took that call to come back to the SEM to help coordinate the different worker development systems on the different fields is a great thing, and hopefully he can still be a wonderful asset to the Caribbean because he was down there. We need that because, you know, because of the financial constraints in our synod, we're not going to be expanding in the normal ways that we did, you know, years and decades ago. So if we're going to, I guess that was another incentive for us in the CCTI. We knew that if we were going to grow in the Caribbean and expand to other islands, we couldn't depend on more and more pastors coming down from the States or teachers. We're going to have to develop our own system of training leaders. And then that was the way our Lutheran church presence could grow on each island and in the islands. And the other aspect is a financial aspect, that as, you know, we had American workers coming down, it was with an American wage, and for an Antiguan congregation to support American workers at an American wage, we would never get from out from under the finance, we'd never be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And how could we ever become financially independent? And then we saw what was happening with budget being cut with Apache and some other fields. And, you know, we should have been doing this all along anyhow, but it gave us an extra incentive. Let's have our own workers that are paid at a Antiguan salary, what is a good, fair Antiguan salary, so that the congregation can actually support its own ministry without the extra expenses that's involved with bringing down a foreign worker. And so I guess that was a big push, too, our concern that the church would be able to not only survive but thrive in the future. And not be dependent on the States.
Well, now that you're in the States and as you look back to in Antigua, are there any personal joys that you can remember being a parish pastor in Antigua?
Yes.
What are they? Explain.
Well, those were my growing up years as a pastor, so just all the things that Antigua taught me as far as every place has its challenges and its blessings, but one of the things I really appreciated personally was people's openness in talking about their faith, a willingness and an eagerness to bring people to church, invite people to church. Never really had to work on developing a prospect list because people just, there was always an unending prospect list. People's openness in expressing their faith. You know, sometimes we talk about us singing up here and being a singing church, but we're not. I don't think, compared to the worship expression, the way people sang and the joy in singing and expressing their faith in worship was something great for me to see as a pastor, but also as a Christian, and wonderful for my family and my children to see. I think also the blessing of being in a culture that's so diverse, and people not only from Antigua but all the different islands and all the different cultures of the West Indies, and people from Europe and South America, in the Middle East, all together in worship. What a great thing to see. Kind of a vision or a picture of what heaven's going to be like, of people from every nation, tribe, language, and people standing before the Lamb. And living in a place with 80 degrees during January and December isn't a bad deal either.
Not a bad deal at all. And you were pastor down there for how long again?
16 years, from 1987 until 2003, when I got exiled to Milwaukee.
Exile, huh?
I was sent in exile.
Okay, well, I think that wraps up our question and answer. I want to thank you for your hard work.
You're welcome. It took a lot out of me. I think I'll go home and take a nap. That's another thing I learned from the Caribbean. Take a nap.
Take a nap. Thank you.